You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Friday night. Everything is okay, I guess. Locked On Wolverines podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. I am your man on the ground, Isaiah Hole, publisher of Wolverines Wire. Honestly, almost forgot about the podcast because I was about to sit down to do it, and then Brandon Jennings committed. Huge news for Michigan. That's for a different time, though, because we have the mailbag here on Friday. Let's get right to it, starting with our leaders and best, James Crudup at James Crudup 6. Top 5 Michigan recruiting wins in the Harbaugh era. I actually had to look up the recruiting list just to kind of go through it. I actually have 6, and one's kind of an asterisk because of how it ended overall. But these are guys that all are – there's one that's currently on the team and 4 are gone as far as have exhausted their eligibility, 1 transferred. So you can guess who that is right out the bat. Number 1 – not in order, just going backwards in, you know, being on the team and everything. Daxton Hill over Alabama. Obviously, the flip to Alabama, the flip back, I mean, that's just huge. Now, keep in mind, a lot of recruits have those offers from the big schools, Alabama, Ohio State. But, I mean, Daxton Hill was one that Alabama really went in on. We've heard the coaches say that he might be the best, Harbaugh said, he might be the best player on the team. So, huge win for Michigan. Especially, could you imagine how much different Alabama's game against Ole Miss would have looked or could have looked if Daxton Hill was back there? Completely different. Number 2 is Donovan Peoples-Jones over Ohio State. Just for the sake that Ohio State was really putting on a full court press. I don't think Donovan knew exactly where he was going until last moment, and he ended up choosing Michigan over Ohio State. Kerry Combs was a mainstay. Urban Meyer made a huge, huge push for him, and yet Michigan went out. A couple of these guys are local, 2 of them actually, but the one that's got the asterisk next to it is Aubrey Solomon over Georgia. Just given that Aubrey Solomon decommitted from Michigan, took him until signing day to get back into the fold officially. It just seemed like he was Georgia bound. You had all those Georgia guys recruiting him at the All-American week. It just seemed like there was no way he was going to be a part of the class, and then he was. So that is absolutely huge. I remember having that story ready to go, sitting there waiting in the parking lot for signing of the Stars in Chrysler Center and hitting publish while I was still at 24/7 to confirm that it had happened. Ambry Thomas over Michigan State. Listen, I was told that Ambry was never going to Michigan State, but they still gave him a lot of pause. Michigan State threw everything they could at him. If you listen to Michigan State experts, they say that they were convinced he was coming to Michigan State. Some of them were saying he was a silent. I was told that he was a silent to Michigan for the longest time and that there was a zero chance he was ever going to end up at Michigan State. So he might have been telling Michigan State something that wasn't what was going to happen. I'm not sure how that went down, but still, huge in-state win to get Ambry Thomas. Devin Bush over Florida State. I mean, you get that you're talking about the recruiting wins, having a Florida State legacy like Brandon Jennings, and he's got his dad. His dad, now who's at Ole Miss as recruiting coordinator over there, he still had a Florida State license plate, like a vanity license plate with the Florida State logo when he was at Michigan. Just walking through the parking lot at Schembechler, you'd always see it. So that's always a big win. Then obviously Rashawn Gary over Clemson in the field. Number 1 recruit, consensus number 1 recruit, not just number 1 to 24/7 or to Rivals or to ESPN, to all of them. And Clemson definitely gave him giant pause. You've read the thing in Overtime from John U. Bacon, which is something I heard before he even committed, that Clemson had offered him money. And you know, that he was really didn't know what he was going to do. We'll throw in, just for the sake of it, some of the more recent guys. Again, the Brandon Jennings commitment is big. Getting a legacy is huge. Flipping a legacy. Greg Crippen, who flipped from Notre Dame. Zach Zinter, who I thought for sure was Notre Dame bound. I know there's some others in there. Trying to think. There's definitely been a couple where I've been surprised, but that's what comes to mind. Josh Barajadicki, what are you looking for in the first game as good or bad signals for the rest of the season? Really, there's about three things I'm going to be looking at. I'm going to be looking at completion percentage from Joe Milton. How much is he making the right read? How much is he finding the right guy? How much is he completing passes? So the accuracy is going to be the big thing there. Defensive line, which I know is supposed to be the strength, but going up against a really tough, and you heard from John Jansen how tough the Minnesota offensive line is. I wrote an article on it again this morning from Sean Nua talking about their offensive line. The offensive or defensive line being able to get some push, but more importantly on the defensive side, especially going up against a pretty good passing offense, the new corners being able to shut some things down. To hold them with definitely under 300 yards, hopefully under 250. Then you feel pretty good about it. Not great, but good. Hold them under 200, you feel awesome. Don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know the last time. I'd have to look up, which I'll do while I keep talking here. I don't know the last time that Minnesota had a game throwing under 200 yards, considering their passing offense was pretty good. But we'll see here, maybe. If the internet cooperates, which it currently isn't, we'll see. But I'm on Michigan somehow instead of Minnesota. I guess I just right next to each other. Anyhow, I don't anticipate that that's what's going to happen. But yeah, looking at it against South Dakota State, they completed 72% of their passes, but had 176. Then 234 against Fresno State, 155 against Illinois, 128 against Nebraska, 177 against Maryland, 211 against Northwestern. So it's possible. But you don't want to see the number like against Penn State, where they passed for 90% and hit 339 yards. That's what you don't want to see. Best game they had was against Purdue, 396 yards, completed 21 of 22 passes. Last possible thing you want to see. So that's what I'll be looking for. The success or failures there will tell me if there's reasons to be concerned or not. But at the same time, if the defense is flying around like it was in 2017 at the beginning of the year, you'll feel awesome, right? So there's that. My brother, Metal Michael Wolf at MWolf21, what has made you the most excited from conversations with the coaches? Honestly, and it might be recency bias, a lot of it has to do with this defensive line talk from both Harbaugh on Monday, Sean Nua on Wednesday. I mean, they're just talking about the defensive line. You know, Harbaugh says it's the identity of the team. You hear all these different names. You hear about how good they're doing in the middle, how Donovan Jeter's really come along. I mean, just hearing that they're the identity of the team, that's got to be more than just blowing smoke, right? Because, you know, there's one thing to just hype a group up. It's another to say, this is the best part. This is the thing that we've got. Running backs still, I mean, that's obvious. And Joe Milton, too. I mean, just they're a little mum on Joe, but because they, I think, don't want to hype him up too much. But, I mean, that's the other thing. I think Joe Milton, obviously, we've heard a lot about him being really good. And I liked what Harbaugh had to say about the corners, saying that he's really happy with what they have back there. Trent Noop at Trent Noop. Who is your biggest surprise rookie in the NFL from Michigan? That's pretty evident who it would be. It would be Michael Onwenu. Not that I didn't think, I mean, I've been saying for what, months, that Michael Onwenu was going to be really good in the NFL. I was saying it before the draft, but I didn't think he was going to be rookie of the year, right? I didn't think out of the 255 some odd players that go to the NFL that Michael Onwenu would be doing the best. So, I mean, it's got to be him. I mean, it's no one else. I mean, everyone else is getting a little bit of time. I mean, you can say Mike Dana has been pretty awesome, and he's been pretty exciting. But at the same time, like, we knew Mike Dana was pretty good, and he's participating about what you'd expect. He's not starting. Michael Onwenu's got some starts. I think he's the only other one. Because we haven't seen, other one than Cesar Ruiz. I did not complete the thought. It's tired in here, you guys. Just been sitting here watching alien movies while working. But anyway, the next closest to a good surprise, I think, is maybe Jordan Glasgow, who's got a blocked punt. Doing really good with the Indianapolis Colts. He's got, didn't get a tackle week one, but he's had a tackle, at least one tackle, every other week. That's how he's going to break in. Finishing us out in segment one, Jimmy Whitner at Jimmy Whitner one. Now the padded practice has started. What position group are you most worried about? Number two, of the projected starters, who are you most surprised about? I mean, doesn't matter if it was padded practice or not padded practice. I'm worried about the corners. I shouldn't be, because I have faith in what Mike Zordich is. I think people undersell what Mike Zordich has done at Michigan. But without knowing how Vincent Gray is going to do as a starter, not having Ambry Thomas right there, and all of that, I think it's just definitely, you know, and who's going to be opposite Vincent Gray? It's way scarier than going into 2017 when it was like, all right, you have LeVert and David. Go. Even when they were like, we don't know who it's going to be, you knew it was going to be LeVert and David. So, yeah. As far as projected starters, I guess the same deal. Jamon Green, if he ends up getting that starting role, that would be the surprise. No one else has been a surprise to me starting wise. There's no surprises in the projections, because I've been telling you that Andrew Stuber was going to start at right guard before I'd ever even talked to anybody about it off the record, and then I talked to people off the record, and that informed the questions about him on the record. So, no surprises. Andrew Vistardis would be the next closest, I guess, as far as projected starters. So, yeah. All right. We are going to move on. We've got a ton more questions. Spent way more time than I intended in the first part because we got so much to get to. But I got to tell you a little bit more about Built Go, which I really wish I would have had a Built Go right before this. Because it's late, I'm tired, and it is what it is. But Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall. Break through it with Built Go every day. Easy to take in 1.5 ounce packages. Put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever. Your golf bag to power through the back nine. Put it in your pocket to take before you do your podcast after walking 4 miles with your dog, whatever. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's a 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. There's 3 delicious flavors, and I've had all 3. I can attest to it. I'm disappointed that I'm almost out. I'm going to have to order more. Peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. So how does Built Go work so well? Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into my system fast. Plus, it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite my work. Beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. Built Go then keeps me going strong with B6, B12 vitamins, 10,000% of your daily. Collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. Visit BuiltGo.com, use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 30% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED and get 30% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go! All right, we continue on with the mailbag. The second segment is our more regular, but not every week, askers. So here we go. Kyle Larrabee at Larrabee_Kyle. Any updates from Coach Warner on the offensive line gelling together? Any recent news or standouts on the offensive line? We haven't talked to Ed Warner. I think we talked to. I don't think we've talked to him And maybe we talk to him in the spring. We haven't talked to him in the fall. So I don't have an answer for you on that. And I'm notoriously hands-off with talking to coaches, especially the last couple of years, less so when I was at 24/7, when it comes to getting behind-the-scenes updates. Hopefully I have an answer for you on that next week, before the game. We'll see. Dennis Fithian, who you all know, I'm sure, from formerly a 97.1, now with the M Zone with Jamie Morris, at Dennis Fithian. Script, Michigan's first five plays on offense. I am definitely not smart enough to do this, but let's go for it. And I'll give you my reasonings. I thought about this yesterday, and I wish I would have written it down because I had a little bit better of a grasp on it then than I do now. All right. So I will go with, I say, cause I'm not one of those people that's against running the ball on first down, but you're playing on the road. It's the season opener. You want to get Milton settled in. So I say you try to get him like a quick check down, like a slant, something that's going to be easy to connect with quickly. Just get you a couple yards, start building the confidence. Second down or first down, whatever it is, second play. Then I run the ball, draw play with either Charbonnet or Haskins. Third play, I line up Charbonnet or Haskins and Chris Evans and work Evans out of the backfield and really see what a defense is going to do to figure things out. Fourth play, assuming you're not in a third and long, in which I think you should just try to get the first down, then I do the Milton 70-yard bomb. See how that works out. Fifth play, I'd say you just try to get it again, another pass play, unless it's like a third and one or third and inches, and see what you can do about getting the ball to maybe not a slant, maybe not something like that. Maybe a screen or let's go with a jet sweep to Giles Jackson. That's what I would do. That pretty much is what I was thinking before. I think I had the jet sweep at like play number 4 or 3 or something, but nonetheless, it's in there. Spencer Whitmore at Spencer Whitmore. Milton touchdown, interception total, season predictions. 8 games is a little different than what you would normally do. So 8 games. Let's say, I'm going to say he gets, we'll go with 20 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. I think that's a pretty, I mean, he very well could do, you know, have worse numbers. But at the same time, I think the 3 interceptions isn't underselling. It feels like I'm underselling it because you're just like, oh, yeah, he's going to throw way more interceptions than that. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. Because I go back to Wilton Spate in 2016. He had 7. Granted, he had 18 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. 2 of those interceptions came against Ohio State, but he hadn't really been throwing interceptions. John O'Korn threw 6 interceptions in his 10 games at Michigan. 3 of them came in 1 game. Shea Patterson threw 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions in 2018, 23-8 in 2019. So I probably should up the interceptions, but again, you're going to have a couple less games. So I'll stay with 20-3. I think they're going to try to take care of the football, and I think Milton will do okay with that. Granted, he has an interception each of the last 2 years, so I'm definitely probably underselling it. Wolverine Devotee at Wolverine Devot 1. Thoughts on how Jennings will project. Do you know anything about how his recruitment went down after the decommitment? Seems like a fast turnaround. Listen, I haven't watched film on him. Not that I'm on record of saying I'm not a talent evaluator, but especially at the high school level. I've seen that Nick Baumgartner and Steve Loren say that he's straight up edge, which makes sense because he's 6'4 and 240 pounds. So it does seem like he very well could be an edge rusher. He talked about being a linebacker. As far as his recruitment, no, I don't know anything about it, to be honest. I just know Don Brown and Brian Jean-Marie stayed in it, but I don't know on I I I don't want to lie to you and pretend like I do. I don't. I just don't. Jacob Heminger, at Heminger Jacob, two-part. Why do people seem to be down on Vincent Gray? I just rewatched the bowl game and honestly shut down his guys all game. The two biggest plays allowed were actually both Dax and LeVert being burnt. I honestly think that Gray will step up and be one of the best cornerbacks in the conference. I'll answer that just because early he had some jitters, especially when you see a guy that isn't fast and he's not that fast, you get people are concerned. They look at him as he's taller, much, much taller than Brandon Watson, but people were really down on Brandon Watson. Dude's still in the league in the NFL on a 53-man roster. So Gray, I mean, they're so big on him and they've been so big on him. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have my own concerns, but it's more of just how is he going to do as a starter full time? We'll see. But he got burned early in the season a few times, and that made people concerned. And when a player gets burned early for Michigan, that stigma follows them forever. Also, more of an opinion part, but if Michigan is able to replicate the performance in the bowl game while getting better QB play, I do think there is a very good shot at being 7-0 going into the game and keeping the game close with a chance to maybe pull out the unspeakable. I mean, I don't disagree. I think that they meant, and this is what I talked about on the M Zone earlier today, I feel like there's a huge mental component that goes, that makes it so they don't execute in the Ohio State game. Like, you know that meme from, like, Grand Theft Auto that's like, oh, here we go again? I feel like one thing goes wrong against Ohio State or any of the better teams they play, and that's how this team does. They hadn't been like that against Florida until the Peach Bowl, but, you know, that's what, you know, Florida's kind of like, well, we beat them, so whatever. But against Penn State and Wisconsin on the road, I feel like they mess up and it's like, oh, here we go again. Same thing with Ohio State. I honestly think this team is a lot better than people are giving them credit for, especially on a national level. We'll see, though. I certainly have my concerns. Ham at Ham_Glasgow. Let's say UM clicks on offense with Milton this year, taking the team to the next level, and the defense is solid as always. Does Michigan get into the college football playoff going 8-1, only loss being at Ohio State and having beaten the second-place team in the Big Ten West in Champions Week? I think 100% yes, assuming it's not an absolute blowout loss to Ohio State. I think it depends on how the season goes, right? Like, if Ohio State is crazy good and Michigan is crazy good, and Michigan loses a game like it did in 2016, and Ohio State's undefeated, then I think there's a really good chance. But it also depends on what happens with some of these other teams, right? Like, listen, I'm predicting right now, and I predicted this the other day anyway, not saying that it's my confidence level is a 5 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10, I am predicting Alabama to beat Georgia. But you know what wouldn't surprise me? Is if Georgia beats Alabama tomorrow, and then those two teams play again in the conference championship, and Alabama wins. Then you have a quandary, because you're like, well, Alabama beat them, and Georgia beat Alabama earlier, and you know that those two teams are going to get deference. They're probably not going to put two Big Ten teams and two SEC teams in with Clemson looming out there. So I kind of feel like the SEC gets the benefit of the doubt. Michigan certainly won't, especially losing to Ohio State. The stigma would be just can't beat the Buckeyes. Continues to be an issue. So I don't think 100% yes. I think it's possible. I don't even know if it's plausible. MG Brady at Michael_M Brady. Question for the pod. Who would you pick as one person on offense and on defense that Michigan could least afford to be out, injury or COVID, for any extended period? Why? Great podcast. Thanks. Appreciate it. Joe Milton on offense. You gotta be able to keep your starting quarterback in regardless, no matter what. Assuming he doesn't pull a Dwan Mathis early on and Cade McNamara comes in like Stetson Bennett. If he looks the way I think he'll look, you got to keep him going. I feel like you've got pieces all across the rest of the offense, including the offensive line, where if someone goes down, someone else goes down, someone can step up. Listen, I think Cade's great. I think Joe could be otherworldly, but we have to see it yet. Defense is a little bit more tricky. I kind of feel like I want to say one of the defensive ends, but I don't know which one. Quiddy Pay or Aiden Hutchinson. But they're so deep there that I feel like I can't do that. Linebacker, it's kind of like, well, if Cam goes out, they'll slide Josh over, or they'll bring in Adam Shibley, who they really like. Or if Josh Ross goes out, then they've got other guys that they can bring in there. Michael Barrett goes out, they've got other guys. So linebacker's probably fine. I feel like they like their safety group. So I guess I'll go Daxton Hill. Daxton Hill would be the other one. Just because, I mean, if he's the best player on the team, like Jim Harbaugh says, you don't want to lose the best player on the team. You got to be able to keep him for every game. You really do. That's where Michigan always seems like. Michigan tends to lose a guy or have a guy really banged up and still playing, like Chase against Ohio State in 2018. Rashawn was already banged up. They always seem to be in the situation where their guys are super hurt and they go up against a pretty much full-strength Ohio State team. Doesn't seem like it happens other places. Wilton Spate, 2016, going up against Ohio State. If he's healthy, Michigan wins that game. Brad G at GRN Scheimer. Gaddis indicated weeks ago we'd all be hearing from Nico regarding his decision. It's obvious he's not returning, but why do you think he never made a formal announcement like other players do when they decide to leave? Because I think he doesn't know. But one person told me that's in the know, listen, Michigan's moved on. The decision's been made for him at this point. I think that's why. I think he's still like, oh, man, maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't. The can has been kicked too far down the road at this point. It's done. But, no, I have no idea why he hasn't. I think it's weird that he hasn't because he made a formal announcement that he was coming back but never made an announcement that he was leaving. I mean, even Ambry made an announcement he was leaving. Patrick McHugh at @the_GD_PatMan. Is Wisconsin more of a threat with Graham Mertz under center? Do you still expect a win against them? I do think they are way more of a threat with Graham Mertz under center. I think he could be the complete difference maker for Wisconsin. But this is his second year. No Jonathan Taylor still. How much is he going to have to put the team completely on his back? I don't know. That's one where I'm kind of like, let's get back to that game before that game. Because we have to see what he does. If it's Jack Cohn, I think Michigan beats him. Graham Mertz, we don't know what we're working against yet. RTK at @Farmerk84. Minnesota gets a lot of press for their passing attack, but last year they rushed 43 times a game and averaged 4.2 yards per carry, both more than Michigan. They also lost their top two running backs. If Michigan can stop Minnesota's running attack, how confident do you feel about a win? Pretty confident, just for the sake of Mohamed Ibrahim. Like I broke down the other day, their passing attack was not significantly different than Michigan's last year, yet people act like it was otherworldly, like it was the second coming of Joe Burrow, which I think is some revisionist history. Tanner Morgan was really good, right? We know that. Tanner Morgan was really good. But what were they? Tanner Morgan had some really good games. He had some not so good games as well. Just to kind of take a quick look at what he did last year. His best game, yes, was Purdue, 21 out of 22, 95% completion percentage. That is insane. But he's kind of erratic, right? Because he has like all 60% plus, even some 70% plus in the first four games. And then you get to Illinois, 9 of 17, 52%. 61% against Nebraska, 53% against Rutgers, which I know they have a good pass defense, but whatever. 57% against Maryland, then back to 90, 69, 65, and then against Wisconsin, 54. Did really good against Auburn as well. If there's not a rainstorm And Shea Patterson threw for 128 yards, like against Nebraska. Like Tanner Morgan did against Nebraska. Or 155 yards against Illinois. 138 yards against Maryland. You know how much Michigan fans would be freaking out, even with some of these lopsided wins? Yeah, you stop the run, make them one-dimensional, you've got a really good shot. Especially because the corners will really know what they're working with. Finishing us out in segment two, Zach Van Lente at Lente Zach. Upset Madness 2020, a product of empty stadiums, or the SEC and Big 12 facing decent competition early in the season. And then he also said, I think this was an old one. Yeah, I think you already asked the second question that I have listed here, but not 100 on that. So I'm just going to answer the first one. Upset Madness question. I mean, I think it's a lot of things, right? Like, I think it's empty, not having the home field advantage, decent competition. I think that, you know, not having a typical off season has kind of evened things out to some degree. Just people, not every team being on the same page again, I guess, has made things just kind of a little topsy-turvy. Listen, that's kind of what I expected to see a lot this year. So that's kind of what we're getting. All right, we still have some more questions left. Quite a few. We're already over our allotted time, but as we always do with the podcast, we're going to go over and continue finishing your questions here. Finishing us out, we've got 6 questions left. Tyler Reynolds at Tyler Reynolds 5. Reasonable expectations for the program every year. Doomed to 9-3 forever, or win the conference and beat OSU someday? I mean, they're not going to be 9-3 forever. Michigan is going to win the conference again someday. Whether it's this year, which I'm not projecting, a couple years down the line, at some point it's going to happen. But the 9-3 forever, listen, that's what Michigan has been for a really, really long time, right? Like, that's the thing is, I think that people act like, yeah, Michigan's been this team. And I remember saying this when I was starting to go to college in 99. I'm like, yeah, Michigan, if they don't go undefeated, then it's a disappointing season. Because, I mean, I'm coming in 2 years after they won a national championship, you know? But to look at their records, which I don't know if I can find it quickly here, but I mean, you look at a lot of these years, that's the 9-3s of it all are kind of like, they went 9-4 last year. Okay, let's go. I want to go before this last year. I want to go before Rich Rod and let's go backwards in Lloyd Carr. They lost their last, won their first 11 games, lost their last two in 2006, 11-2, 7-5 in 2005, 9-3 in 2004, 10-3 in 2003, 10-3 in 2002, 8-4 in 2001, 9-3 in 2000, 10-2 in 99, 10-3 in 98, undefeated in 97, 8-4 in 96, 9-4 in 95, 8-4 in 94, 8-4 in 93, 9-0-3 in 1992, 10-2 in 91, 9-3 in 90, 10-2 in 89, 9-2-1 in 88, 8-4 in 87, 11-2 in 86, 10-1-1 in 85, 6-6 in 84, 9-3 in 83. I could just keep going back until you get into the 70s. I mean, even in the 70s, 10-2, 10-2, 8-2-2, 10-1-0, 10-0-1, 10-1-0, 11-1-0. This is what Michigan is. This is what Michigan has always been. That's what Michigan's doing. Eventually, yes, I think they'll get better. But I think it all depends on the quarterback position. Getting elite play at quarterback. And I'm talking about today's elite, not what was elite 10 years ago, 15, 20, 30 years ago. Elite, elite. You know what I mean by that. MC at 20, MC 20. How is Michigan going to match up with Kyle Pitts in the Outback Bowl with all this shuffling they are doing on the back end? Listen, if Michigan and Florida are playing in the Outback Bowl, both teams have bigger concerns. That's all I got. Scott Johnson at Dr. Scott Johnston. Scott Johnston. Rashad Bateman is the real deal, but shouldn't UM be able to take him away by double covering him and forcing them to throw elsewhere? Are there wide receiver threats deeper? Can't Daxton Gray commit to blanketing him? I'm sure they can, and I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll have a plan. But, you know, Minnesota's, I think, deeper than that. Maybe I'm wrong. I know they lost the two of their main guys from last year in they lost Tyler Johnson. I was thinking of Rodney Smith as the other guy. But, yeah, Rashad Bateman's the other big threat. We don't know much about what Chris Ottman-Bell, Demetrius Douglas, whoever else they have, what they bring to the table. So, yeah, you can do that, but maybe some of these other guys are really good. But, yeah, you definitely need to stop Rashad Bateman. But you can only allocate so much of your, you know, you can double him. You can double team people up front. The offensive line's going to be a challenge. So you got to pick your poison in any given play. Leon Adams at LL Adam. Would losing Edwards be worse than losing Najee Harris to Alabama? Harris was number two overall recruit, but could Edward have a better career? And Wolverine devotee responds saying, we ain't losing Edwards, LOL. Listen, I think they very well could lose Edwards. Edwards does not know where he is going. I like to remind people when it comes to recruiting. It isn't like these kids know where they're going, and it's just our job to follow the clues until we figure out how to just coax out the answer. He does not know where he is going right now. He is not seemingly leaning anywhere. If I had to pick where he is going, if I had to put money on it, I don't know if I'd put it on Michigan or Georgia. If you forced me, I'd probably put it on Georgia. So, I think it would be worse because he's in state. In that light, it's hard to answer that because Najee had told people he was coming. Najee had told people, I'm in. I'm coming to Michigan. That deal was done. Michigan led for him a long time, and I was told by someone very reliable that you all know that Najee had never officially like committed to Alabama. They were just basically like, hey, you can, we want to consider you committed. And he's like, all right, if it gets people off my back, cool, because that's how he is. But no, I think it would be worse losing Edwards because he's the in-state guy and a guy that they're all in for. They need a guy like him for the future. Maybe not the short term, but definitely the long term. And I don't know about the better career or not. Najee's doing pretty good, but Najee was behind a lot of guys. Edwards is also going to be behind a lot of guys when he gets here, probably. Because I think that they have a really good room. Via Instagram, Holmes with Humor. Something I've been wondering, there was talk about when the Big Ten season was canceled and if the SEC and ACC play a season, how that will negatively affect the Big Ten for years. But what impact will there be if the Big Ten finishes their season and the ACC and SEC can't? That's a good question, but I don't know. I really don't. I think it would be... You know, you could sit there and say, hey, listen, our conference puts, you know, we put the health and safety of our players first. It's the same way the SEC has been negatively recruiting the Big Ten, probably negatively recruiting the Big Ten before they got to play. I think that you can use that, but it's a little bit different compared to like, hey, we tried to have a season, we couldn't do it, compared to just we're not going to do it. So it won't have as big of an impact, but that's a good question. One last one again from Dr. Scott Johnston. I should have included it in the above. I didn't notice he asked two, but if Michigan doesn't win week one, ranked team on the road, some will call for Harbaugh to be fired. Some will even seek to replace him with PJ Fleck. I like Harbaugh, but if Minnesota wins the game, is it fair to say that Fleck has done more in less time with much less? Yeah, but at the same time, I think it's easier sometimes when you go to a place where no one has that expectation of you and you can kind of rise up and surprise people compared to doing it at Michigan, right? That's, I wouldn't say that he's done more in less time with much less. I mean, he has, but I think you're always going to get every team's best when you're Michigan. You're not going to get that when you're Minnesota. After a few years of this, yes, you'll get the best if you're Minnesota. If they just start winning the, you know, the West every year, then they'll be formidable. But it's just kind of not how it works in that sense, right? Because you also have to keep in mind Michigan's barrier, for the most part, has been Ohio State. Minnesota doesn't have to play Ohio State on a yearly basis. That's Michigan's measuring stick. It is not Minnesota's measuring stick. So I don't think it's a fair comparison. I'll say this. If Fleck wins that game, gets double-digit wins again, I'll be the first to say I did not anticipate that he was going to do that good of a job. If he wins the Big Ten, I'll even more so. But that's what Michigan's striving for. I don't think that even if Minnesota beats Michigan in week one, I don't think in week nine Minnesota is going to be able to beat Ohio State, right? So, all right, this was one of our longest ones, if not our longest one. So that'll do it for us today, maybe over the weekend to make up for Monday's episode. If not, we will be back full strength five shows this next week with it being game week coming up. That's right. Almost here. Big Ten season. Thanks for listening. Peace.